The National Broadcasting Company presents, transcribes, Sir Laurence Olivier in Theatre Royal.
This is Laurence Olivier. Once again, it is my pleasure to introduce to you another in this series of programs. And this week, my choice of subject is, for the first time, the work of an American author. And a mighty American author, too. Herman Melville. It's a favorite story, but unexpected, both in mood and setting. Almost impossible to associate with the author of Moby Dick. Written in a comedy vein, but a strange tenderness adheres to it. A haunting melancholy just under the surface of its light-hearted exterior. I hope it will interest you, as it does me. I am to play the part of the master in chancery who tells the story. The setting is New York many years ago, and the title is Bartleby. By profession, I am a lawyer. By disposition, I am a man who has always believed that the easiest way of life is the best. The result is that though I belong to a profession proverbially energetic and nervous, even to turbulence at times, yet nothing of that sort have I ever suffered to invade my peace. As lawyers go, you might even say that I was unambitious. I aspire to nothing more than a snug business among rich men's bonds and mortgages and title deeds.
With submission, sir, that business has won us quite a respectable reputation in Wall Street.
Quite so, Turkey. That was Turkey, one of my copying clerks. At least Turkey was his nickname, because of his bright red face. He's a very steady fellow, Turkey is, hardworking and reliable, at least in the morning. Oddly enough, as the day wears on, Turkey's face becomes redder and redder, and the afternoon is quite a bad time for him. He becomes downright careless.
With submission, sir, I consider myself your right-hand man. In the morning, I merely marshal and deploy my columns, but in the afternoon, I put myself at their head and gallantly charge the foe like this.
Turkey! You've upset the inkwell. And look at all those blots.
Oh, with submission, sir, I'm getting old. Surely, sir, you won't urge a blot or two against gray hair.
No, Turkey, but...
Old age, even if it blot the page, is honorable. With submission, sir, we're both getting old.
Yes, Turkey. I merely thought that perhaps you might like to work simply in the mornings and take the
With submission, sir, mornings and afternoons.
Yes, Turkey. You see the sort of trouble I have with Turkey in the afternoons. Even so, he's a very conscientious fellow, conscientious and hardworking. The same might be said of my other copyist, Nippers, as we call him.
Oh, hang this table. If it isn't too low, it's too high.
But Nippers, please, look. If you were to tilt it towards you with the book under the leg, like this, it would serve you perfectly.
I've tried it like that. It stopped the circulation of my arms.
Oh, well, like this, then.
No, I've tried it like that, too. Makes my back ache, stooping over it. Hang the table. How can I possibly be expected to...
Well, you see the way that it was with Nippers. Irritable. Luckily, the cause of his irritability, indigestion, was worse in the morning than the afternoon, so that as Turkey began to go off, Nippers began to come on, which was all very convenient under the circumstances. Finally, there was our office boy, Ginger Nuts.
They call me that because I'm the one that goes and fetches them. Ginger Nuts, bags of them.
Yes, rather too many of them, I sometimes think. By the way, Turkey, you really must be more careful. Licking a ginger nut and clapping it onto a mortgage for a seal, you know. Really.
With submission, sir. It was generous of me to find you in stationery on my own account.
That's as may be, Turkey, but even so...
He'd better be more careful now, sir, hadn't he? There's a new one waiting outside.
A new one? Oh, you mean in answer to our advertisement. Choyman, Ginger Nut, Choyman.
Yes, sir.
After all, since we've come into all this business as a master in chancery, you and Nippers can hardly be expected to keep pace with it, Turkey. We need additional help, eh? Mm-hmm. Ah, come in. You've come in answer to our advertisement, have you? Good. And this is a sample of your work, is it? Yes. Good. Very good. Very neat hand. Yes. And the salary, $12 a week, is satisfactory? Good. Very good. Well, then you can start with us immediately. Oh, and by the way, what is your name?
Bartleby.
Bartleby was quite an acquisition. At least he seemed so at first. As if long famishing for something to copy, he seemed to gorge himself on my documents. There was no pause for digestion. He ran a day and night line, copying by sunlight and by candlelight. I should have been quite delighted with his application had he been cheerful, but he sat there behind the screen in a corner of my office and he wrote away silently, palely, mechanically. Now then, let me see. Underwood versus Underwood. Bartleby, just check this over with me, will you, Bartleby?
I would prefer not to.
Bartleby, as I was saying, this will have to be read over. Just come and check it with me, will you?
I would prefer not to.
Prefer not to? What do you mean? Are you moonstruck? I want you to help me compare this sheet here. Take it.
I would prefer not to.
I looked at him in astonishment. His face was composed, his eye was calm. Not a ripple of agitation anywhere. If he had looked the least bit angry or impertinent, I should have dismissed him on the spot. As it was, I decided to forget the whole matter for the present. Nippers?
Yes, sir?
Now, just come and check this over with me, will you?
Right away, sir.
Unfortunately, that was only the first of many quite extraordinary scenes. A few days later, Bartleby concluded four lengthy copies of a testimony in a high court action. These also had to be checked for accuracy. I called out Turkey, Nippers, and Ginger Nut from the next office. And finally, Bartleby. Come along, Bartleby. We're waiting.
What is it?
The copies. The copies. We're going to check them. Here, take the fourth one.
I would prefer not to.
Why not?
I would prefer not to.
But these are your own copies we're going to check. It's going to save you time, you see, because one reading will check all four of them. It's common practice. Every copyist helps to check his copies, doesn't he?
I would prefer not to.
You are decided, then? You are not going to do as I ask? Even when it's common practice and common sense? Well, Turkey, what do you think of this? Aren't I right?
With submission, sir, I think that you are.
Nippers, what do you think of it?
I think I should kick him out of the office.
Ginger Nut, what do you think?
I think he's a little loony, sir.
Well, you hear what they say, Bartleby. You see, it's your duty. Well, I suppose we can just manage the four of us, hey? Well, I'm afraid that scene was only one of many. We grew used to the fact that he would never check his copies, would never carry messages, in fact, must never be asked to do anything at all but copying. Otherwise, he was most diligent. He always was there when I arrived in the morning and still there when the last of us left at night. In fact, I gave him his own key to the office. Now, one Sunday morning, I had occasion to go back to my chambers for something I'd forgotten. That's queer, eh? There seems to be a key in the lock already, on the inside. Goodness gracious, Bartleby, what are you doing here on a Sunday morning?
I'm sorry, but I'm busy.
Busy, but you're only half-dressed, man.
I'm sorry, I'm busy. You'll have to come back later. If you walk around the block two or three times, I shall probably have finished.
Yes, of course, Bartleby. Can you believe it? I slunk away from my own door and did as I was told. Two or three turns round the block. It was the mildness of the man which had disarmed me. In fact, more or less unmanned me. In any case, what on earth could he be doing in the office on Sunday morning, improperly dressed? I was determined to find out, so in due course, back to the office I went. Bartleby? Oh, he seems to have gone. What goes on behind that screen, I wonder? Wait a minute, what's this? A blanket? Goodness gracious, the man has actually been sleeping on the sofa. And soap, towel, blacking box, tin basin? Why, the man actually lives here. Lives in my office. Really? Keeping a bachelor's hall all by himself. Really? Oh, the poor man. How friendless. How lonely. A deserted office in an empty building in a deserted street. home. Poor fellow. I must ask him. Good morning, Turkey. Here we are. Hoggleford versus Hoggleford. In triplicate, please, Turkey.
Very good, sir.
Bartleby? Bartleby, come here. Now, I'm not going to ask you to do anything you would prefer not to. I simply wish to speak to you. Where were you born, Bartleby? Will you tell me?
I would prefer not to.
Well, will you tell me anything about yourself?
I would prefer not to.
But what reasonable objection can you have to me? I feel friendly towards you. Well.
But at present, I prefer to give no answer.
Prefer not, huh? I'd prefer him if I were you, sir. I'd give him his preferences, a stubborn mule.
Mr. Nippers, I'd prefer that you withdrew for the present.
Oh, all right.
You see, Bartleby, this is unreasonable.
With submission, sir, I was thinking if Bartleby here would simply prefer to take a quart of ale every day, it would do him much toward mending it.
So you've got the word too, Turkey.
With submission, what word, sir?
If you don't mind, I would prefer to be left alone.
That's the word, Turkey. That's it.
Oh, prefer.
Yes.
Yes, it's a queer word. I never use it myself. But, sir, as I was saying, if he would prefer...
Turkey, would you leave us alone, please?
Oh, certainly, sir, if you prefer it, then. Sure.
Look, sir, would you prefer this copied on blue paper
or... Go away, Nippers. I don't prefer anything, ever.
Very well.
Obviously, the man was driving us all mad. There was only one thing to do about him. The man would have to be dismissed. I determined to have it out with him the very next day. Now, see here, Bartleby. I've been watching you all morning. You've done nothing but stand there and look out of the window at a blank wall all the morning. Now, you're not employed to stand there doing nothing, Bartleby. You're employed to sit there and get on with your copying.
I've decided not to do any more.
What's this? Do no more copying?
No more.
But why not? What's the reason?
Don't you see the reason for yourself?
Don't I? Oh, you mean your eyesight. Yes, the light is rather bad. In that corner. Yes, you mean you've strained your eye? Yes. Well, perhaps for a few days it would be a good idea if you stopped and rested.
I've given up copying permanently.
Well, that was that. He stayed on a fixture. In fact, he became even more of a fixture than before, if that was possible. Now he would do absolutely nothing in the office. Absolutely nothing at all. Obviously, there was only one thing to be done, however sorry I might feel for him. After all, it was a business that I was running. And after a few weeks, I had simply no option left. Bartleby, I'm afraid I must give you 6 days' notice. 6 days, Bartleby, from today.
In a moment, we continue. Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Pipe and Slippers are in order tomorrow, as all the Sunday stay-at-homers enjoy the finest in variety entertainment. For what finer musical offering could be had than an evening spent with Guido Cantelli and the NBC Symphony in another brilliant concert from Carnegie Hall? Tomorrow's performance features Tchaikovsky's Symphony No. 4 in F minor, plus a stirring Rossini overture. Add to the finest in music the latest developments in the arts and sciences, as presented by leaders in every cultural field on Collector's Item. And then there is your Sunday newspaper of the air, Weekend, the most effortless way to keep abreast of the times, with everything from cover story right down to feature page, and spotlighting such famous byliners as Merrill Muller, Earl Godwin, Tex McCrary, and Elmo Roper. Cap culture with comedy as you join the ever-delightful Marriott, played by Hume Cronin and Jessica Tandy, when they decide it is time to economize, but end up in financial straits anyhow, on the warmly human series, The Marriage. And then for gripping drama, listen and learn as you experience the horrors of an alcoholic on his Lost Weekend. Glenn Ford plays the lead in this award-winning tale heard on tomorrow's NBC Star Playhouse. So go ahead this once, be lazy and like it. Spend a top-notch Sunday at home with the best in entertainment, courtesy NBC.
And now we continue Theatre Royal with Sir Laurence Olivier.
Yes, decently as I could, I told Bartleby that in 6 days' time he must unconditionally leave my office. I warned him to take measures in the interval for procuring some other abode. I even offered to assist him in the task if he himself would take the first step. And, of course, I told him that when he left, he would not go entirely unprovided. At last, the sixth day came to an end.
Bartleby,
the time has come. You must leave. I'm sorry for you. Here is your money, but you must go.
I would prefer not to.
You must. Bartleby, I owe you $12 on account. Here are 32. The odd 20 are yours. Will you take them? Very well. I will leave them here on the table. I really can't wait any longer. After you've removed your things from the office, Bartleby, you must lock up Appu and leave the key under the mat. I shan't see you again, so goodbye to you. If I can be of any service to you, after you've found a new home, please do let me know. Goodbye, Bartleby, and good luck. As I walked home, I couldn't help congratulating myself. Getting rid of him like that, quietly, without any vulgar bullying, no bravado of any sort, no hectoring. I had to admit that my handling of the matter had been masterly. Without loudly bidding Bartleby to depart, as somebody else might have done, I had assumed the ground that depart he must. It was only the following day that I began to have any doubts of my full success. Bartleby, I'm seriously displeased. I'm pained, Bartleby. I thought better of you. I'd imagined you such a gentleman that in any delicate dilemma a slight hint would suffice. In short, an assumption. But it appears I'm deceived. Why, you've not even touched the money I left for you. Now look here, Bartleby. Will you or will you not leave?
I would prefer not to leave.
Some weeks passed, and during which I gradually became persuaded that these troubles of mine had been predestinated from eternity. I began to feel that Bartleby was billeted upon me for some mysterious purpose of an all-wise providence, which it was not for a mere mortal like me to fathom. I determined to persecute him no more. He was harmless and noiseless as the furniture, standing there behind his screen, looking out of the window at a blank brick wall. I never felt so private as when I knew he was there. Unfortunately, I could never persuade others to think of Bartleby in just the same way.
With submission, sir, I think you're being imposed upon.
But why, Turkey? Why?
With submission, sir, I think something ought to be done about him.
About Bartleby, you mean? Well, but what can be done about him?
With submission, sir, couldn't we call a police officer?
What, Turkey? What did you say? A police officer? On what grounds could we have him removed?
With submission, sir, vagrancy.
What? Bartleby, a vagrant? A wanderer, when he refuses to budge? It's precisely because he isn't a vagrant that he's still with us.
Then may I suggest no visible means of support?
No, Turkey. He does support himself. I don't know how, I'm sure, but he certainly does. And no man can produce a better proof of his power to support himself than by doing so. No. That won't do.
With submission, sir, he's getting us talked about. I've had it from Mr. Winterbottom's clerk. He called here when we were out to lunch, all except Bartleby. So up goes the clerk to ask him when you were expected back, sir. But he says not a single word. He stands there silent in the middle of the room.
Like the last column of some ruined temple. Yes. The man must certainly have been put out.
I know who'd be put out if I had my way. I said I know who'd be put out.
Yes. Nippers, please mind your own business.
With submission, sir, you know, something ought to be done.
Much as it went against my better nature, I was forced at last to admit that Turkey was right. On all sides among my professional acquaintances, I heard strange rumors running around, touching upon the mysterious figure that I kept in my office. Indeed, I began to wonder, apprehensively, whether he might not in the end perhaps outlive me and claim possession of my chambers by right of perpetual occupancy. Clearly, there was only one thing to be done. Bartleby, some time ago, I made a suggestion to you. I suggested the idea of your departure. You may remember, Bartleby, in a calm and serious way, I commended the idea to your careful and mature consideration. It is now some time ago. Have you come to any decision?
Yes.
May I inquire what that decision is?
I would prefer to stay.
Very well, Bartleby. You have left me no alternative. Since you will not leave me, I shall have to leave you. I have recently found these chambers too far from the city hall. The air is unwholesome. In a word, I propose to remove my offices next week.
I shall no longer require your services at my new premises. I'm telling you now so that you can look for another place. Yes, that's how it was done. On the appointed day, I engaged carts and men, proceeded to my chambers, and having but little furniture, everything was removed in a few hours. Everything but Bartleby. To the end, he remained standing silently behind his screen. And when that in turn was removed, we left him standing motionless, alone in an otherwise empty office. Goodbye, Bartleby. I'm going now. Goodbye, and God bless you. Oh, and take that, will you? Oh dear. Well, goodbye, Bartleby. Safely set up in my new quarters, I must admit that for the first few days I kept the door locked and started at every footfall in the passage. When I returned to my rooms after a little absence, I would pause at the threshold for an instant and attentively listen before I used my key. But the fears were needless. Bartleby never came nigh me. Even so, it wasn't very long before I heard news of him.
With submission, sir, there's a man here from our old offices.
Not Bartleby.
No, sir. The lawyer who took our offices over from us.
Oh, dear.
He says you are responsible for Bartleby and that you left him there. And that he refuses to do any copying or anything at all, as he prefers not to. And that he refuses to quit the premises.
Exactly, sir. He absolutely refuses to quit the premises.
I'm very sorry, sir, but really, the man you allude to is nothing to me. He's no relation or apprentice of mine.
Very well. I shall settle him then. Good morning, sir.
Several days passed, and I heard nothing more. By that time, I really began to believe that all was over with Bartleby. But at the end of the second week, I was disillusioned.
With submission, sir, they say that since he was turned out of our old offices, Bartleby has taken to sitting upon the banisters and sleeping in the entry. They say that everyone is concerned, sir, that clients are leaving the offices and fears are entertained of a mob.
Oh.
With submission, sir, they say that you must really do something without delay.
Obviously, something had to be done. So I determined to go and reason with him. Going back to my old haunt, there was Bartleby on the landing outside my one-time door. Now, Bartleby, what are you doing here?
Sitting on the banister.
Bartleby, are you aware that you're a very great worry to me? One of two things must take place. Either you must do something, or something must be done to you. Now, what sort of a business would you like to engage in? Would you like to do some copying for someone? Someone else?
I would prefer not to make any change.
Would you like a clerkship in a dry goods store?
Well, there's too much confinement about that. No, I wouldn't like a clerkship. But I'm not particular.
Too much confinement? But you keep yourself confined all the time.
I would prefer not to take a clerkship.
Then, how would a nice bartender's business suit you?
Oh, I wouldn't like that at all.
No.
Though, as I said before, I'm not particular.
No. Well, then, would you like to travel through the country collecting bills for the merchants? That would improve your health?
No, I would prefer to be doing something else.
Then how about going as a companion with some young gentleman, say, to Europe?
No, I'm not particular, but I like to be stationary.
Then, hang it, stationary you shall be. If you haven't removed yourself from these premises before tonight, I shall be bound to remove the premises. There was no help for it. I had myself to leave town. And for the next few days, I drove about the upper part of Manhattan in my Rockaway, crossed over to Jersey City and Hoboken, and paid fugitive visits to Manhattanville and Astoria. In fact, I had almost lived in my Rockaway for a time. So fearful was I of being hunted out by an enraged Wall Street landlord that I only paid fleeting visits to my desk. But it was on one of these that I heard the news.
With submission, sir, Bartleby is no more. He was arrested and taken to the tombs, the halls of justice, I should say. They say that he offered no resistance, but that under arrest he refused all food and was found dead 2 days ago in the prison yard.
Bartleby dead. Oh, no. for Bartleby.
His identity, sir, has now been established by the proper authorities.
It has?
With submission, sir. They say that Bartleby was a subordinate clerk in the dead letter office at Washington. He lost the post by a change in the administration.
Dead letters. Does it not sound like dead men? Conceive a man by nature in misfortune, prone to a pallid hopelessness. Can any business seem more fitted to heighten it than that of continually handling dead letters and assorting them for the flames? For by the cartload they are annually burned. Hope for those who died still hoping. Good tidings for those who died stifled by unrelieved calamities. On errands of life, those letters speed to death. And by an odd coincidence, it was a letter which gave me the clue to Bartleby's secret. Perhaps it was only fitting that the letter should be a lawyer's letter.
With submission, sir, this letter came today for the late Mr. Bartleby. It was forwarded on from a former address, and I took the liberty of opening it. Shall I read it to you, sir?
Please do, Turkey.
The letter, sir, reads as follows. Dear sir, adverting to your esteem to the 14th ult and inquiries into the whereabouts of your missing child, have established the fact that she is unhappily deceased. After the death of her mother, she was placed in the care of the local authorities as a minor without known relatives or visible means of support. It was in the care of said local authorities that the child entered upon a sad decline, which was attributed by the attendant physician to loneliness and a broken heart. It is with deep regret...
Stop, Turkey. Stop. Poor child. And poor Bartleby. So the man without an identity has assumed an identity at last. The identity which came to him too late. What his tragedy may have been, well, it is not for us to inquire. Poor Bartleby. Poor humanity.
What shall I do with the letter, sir?
Bury it, Turkey, where Bartleby himself would wish it to be buried. Return it marked person unknown to the dead letter office. This is Laurence Olivier again. I would like to express my thanks to our cast, which has included this week Lionel Merton, who played the part of Bartleby, MacDonald Park, who played the part of Turkey, and also Charles Irwin and Lois McLean. And so, until next week, when I hope once again to have the pleasure of your company, au revoir, and thank you.
Sir Laurence Olivier starred in today's transcribed program. The script was by Derek Patmore. The music was under the direction of Sidney Torch. Theatre Royal is an NBC presentation produced and directed by Harry Allen Towers.
We honor scouts and former scouts today and wish for the movement a truly brilliant future. Enjoy the big preview next on the NBC Radio Network.